Blog Talk Radio.
Well, let anybody come in and control the economy of your community. Control the housing, control the education, control the jobs, control the businesses under the pretext that you want to integrate. No, you're out of your mind. The political, the economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a run-down community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar out. And you and I are in a double trap, because not only do we lose by taking our money someplace else and spending it, when we try and spend it in our own community, we're trapped because we haven't had sense enough to set up stores and control the businesses of our community. The man who's controlling the stores in our community is a man who doesn't look like we do. He's a man who doesn't even live in the community. So you and I, even when we try and spend our money in the block where we live or the area where we live, we're spending it with a man who, when the sun goes down, takes that basket full of money in another part of the town. So we're trapped, double trapped, triple trapped. Anywhere we go, we find that we're trapped. And every kind of solution that someone comes up with is just another trap. But the political and economic philosophy of black nationalism, the economic philosophy of black nationalism shows our people the importance of setting up these little stores and developing them and expanding them into larger operations. Woolworth didn't start out big like they are today. They started out with a dime store and expanded and expanded and expanded until today they're all over the country and all over the world, and they're getting some of everybody's money. Now, this what you and I and General Motors, the same way, didn't start out like it is. It started out just a little rat race type operation, and it expanded and expanded until today it's where it is right now. And you and I have to make a start. And the best place to start is right in the community where we live. So our people not only have to be re-educated to the importance of supporting black business, but the black man himself has to be made aware of the importance of going into business. And once you and I go into business, we own and operate at least the businesses in our community. What we will be doing is developing a situation wherein we will actually be able to create employment for the people in the community. And once you can create some employment in the community where you live, it will eliminate the necessity of you and me having to act ignorantly and disgracefully boycotting and picketing some cracker someplace else trying to beg him for a job. Anytime you have to rely upon your enemy for a job, you're in bad shape. And he is your enemy. Anything, you wouldn't be in this country if some enemy hadn't kidnapped you and brought you here. On the other hand, some of you think you came here on the Mayflower. So as you can see, brothers and sisters, today, this afternoon, it's not our intention to discuss religion. We're going to forget religion. If we bring up religion, we'll be in an argument. And the best way to keep away from arguments and differences, as I said earlier, put your religion at home, in the closet. Keep it between you and your God. Because if it hasn't done anything more for you than it has, you need to forget it anyway. Whether you are a Christian or a Muslim or a nationalist, we all have the same problem. They don't hang you because you're a Baptist. They hang you because you're black. They don't attack me because I'm a Muslim. They attack me because I'm black. They attack all of us for the same reason. All of us catch hell from the same enemy. We're all in the same bag, in the same boat. We suffer political oppression, economic exploitation, and social degradation. All of them from the same enemy. The government has failed us. You can't deny that. Anytime you live in the 20th century, 1964, and you walking around here singing, "We shall overcome," the government has failed us. This is part of what's wrong with you. You do too much singing. Today it's time to stop singing and start swinging. You can't sing up on freedom, but you can swing up on some freedom. Cassius Clay can sing, but singing didn't help him to become the heavyweight champion of the world. Swinging helped him. But this government has failed us. The government itself has failed us. And the white liberals who have been posing as our friends have failed us. And once we see that all these other sources to which we turn have failed, we stop turning to them and turn to ourselves. We need a self-help program, a do-it-yourself philosophy, a do-it-right-now philosophy, it's-already-too-late philosophy. This is what you and I need to get with. And the only way we're going to solve our problem is with a self-help program. Before we can get a self-help program started, we have to have a self-help philosophy. Black nationalism is a self-help philosophy. What's so good about it, you can stay right in the church where you are and still take black nationalism as your philosophy. You can stay in any kind of civic organization that you belong to and still take black nationalism as your philosophy. You can be an atheist and still take black nationalism as your philosophy. This is a philosophy that eliminates the necessity for division and argument. Because if you're black, you should be thinking black. And if you're black and you're not thinking black at this late date, well, I'm sorry for you. Once you change your philosophy, you change your thought pattern. Once you change your thought pattern, you change your attitude. Once you change your attitude, it changes your behavior pattern. And then you go on into some action. As long as you got a sit-down philosophy, you'll have a sit-down thought pattern. And as long as you think that old sit-down thought, you'll be in some kind of sit-down action. They'll have you sitting in everywhere. It's not so good to refer to what you're going to do as a sit-in. That right there castrates you. Right there it brings you down. What goes with it? What think of the image of someone sitting? An old woman can sit. An old man can sit. A chump can sit. A coward can sit. Anything can sit. Well, you and I have been sitting long enough, and it's time today for us to start doing some standing and some fighting to back that up. When we look at other parts of this earth upon which we live, we find that black, brown, red, and yellow people in Africa and Asia are getting their independence. They're not getting it by singing, "We shall overcome." No, they're getting it through nationalism. It is nationalism that brought about the independence of the people in Asia. Every nation in Asia gained its independence through the philosophy of nationalism. Every nation on the African continent that has gotten its independence brought it about through the philosophy of nationalism. And it will take black nationalism that to bring about the freedom of 22 million Afro-Americans here in this country where we have suffered colonialism for the past 400 years. America is just as much a colonial power as England ever was. America is just as much a colonial power as France ever was. In fact, America is more so a colonial power than they, because she's a hypocritical colonial power behind it. What do you call second-class citizenship? Why, that's colonization. Second-class citizenship is nothing but 20th century slavery. How are you going to tell me you're a second-class citizen? They don't have second-class citizenship in any other government on this earth. They just have slaves and people who are free. Well, this country is a hypocrite. They try and make you think they set you free by calling you a second-class citizen. No, you're nothing but a 20th century slave. Just as it took nationalism to remove colonialism from Asia and Africa, it'll take black nationalism today to remove colonialism from the backs and the minds of 22 million Afro-Americans here in this country. And 1964 looks like it might be the year of the ballot or the bullet. Why does it look like it might be the year of the ballot or the bullet? Because Negroes have listened to the trickery and the lies and the false promises of the white man now for too long. And they're fed up. They've become disenchanted. They've become disillusioned. They've become dissatisfied. And all of this has built up frustrations in the black community that makes the black community throughout America today more explosive than all of the atomic bombs the Russians can ever invent. Whenever you got a racial powder keg sitting in your lap, you're in more trouble than if you had an atomic powder keg sitting in your lap. When a racial powder keg goes off, it doesn't care who it knocks out the way. Understand this, it's dangerous. And in 1964, this seems to be the year. Because what can the white man use now to fool us? After he put down that march on Washington, and you see all through that now, he tricked you, had you marching down to Washington. Yes, had you marching back and forth between the feet of a dead man named Lincoln and another dead man named George Washington, singing, "We Shall Overcome." He made a chump out of him. He made a fool out of him. He made you think you were going somewhere and you end up going nowhere but between Lincoln and Washington. So today our people are disillusioned. They've become disenchanted. They've become dissatisfied. And in their frustrations, they want action. And in 1964, you see this young black man, this new generation, asking for the ballot or the vote. That old Uncle Tom action is outdated. The young generation don't want to hear anything about the odds are against us. What do we care about odds? When this country here was first being founded, there were 13 colonies. The whites were colonized. They were fed up with this taxation without representation. So some of them stood up and said, "Liberty or death." Though I went to a white school over here in Mason, Michigan. The white man made the mistake of letting me read his history books. He made the mistake of teaching me that Patrick Henry was a patriot. and George Washington wasn't nothing nonviolent about old Pat or George Washington. Liberty or death was what brought about the freedom of whites in this country from the English. They didn't care about the ox. Why, they faced the ram.
And you are not coming to the people's defense.
That's right, right.
So if you want us to do better, then damn it, you do better. Do what you say. This country is supposed to be about the land of the free for all. It has not been free for black people, and we are tired.
One question, protect and serve who? To me it seems that they just quick to observe you, and then they have the nerve to come and disturb you, and force a curfew to physically hurt you. I heard the patience was a virtue, but how long we gonna disregard the fact is we all talk and practice. This new age, trying to rebuke rage, or y'all gonna need some skin more tougher than Luke Cage. Trayvon, Terrence, they gone, perish, on up to George Floyd. See what your laws avoid, and now we gotta find some sort of order before the slaughter gets brought up with mortar reporter. Those who do the unthought. This we gotta put a mandate on. You see my bullet wounds and try to put a band-aid on. As soon as one of us take a stand, they wrong, because you wanna keep us on your plantation. Come on.
Must be a better way.
Get up. Get up.
Must be a better way.
Where they comfort ya,
the sheets are on,
and I don't see no comfort up. Now you may prepare for 2K, but they prepare for 3Ks. Order comes here later. I see you wants to fight for solidarity, and still in all I see a lot of y'all ain't hearing me. You know what? The fact is y'all kinda forgot to struggle like activists, all timers. Learn to walk the walk on the path when it's narrow. Can't be crabs in the barrel, this is grabbing the apparel. We should demand order to correct the manslaughter for residents of Flint drinking tan water. And Puerto Rico, what they here for your people? Let's stay strong and try to keep a hand in it. Transcend it until the next pandemic. Let's go.
You only got suspended. They all say that I'm hating and only race baiting. But we ain't gonna trust us until we get justice. Yeah. In the fight for peace, we gonna rise like heat. Hey, cause in the darkest hour, we still fight the power. Yo, you can't stop the cavalry from Malcolm to Mallory. We're gonna keep it 100. We ain't trying to run from it. Yo, think we're gonna stay distracted. Y'all got it backwards.
We are oppressed. We are exploited. We are downtrodden. We are denied not only civil rights, but even human rights. So the only way we're going to get some of this oppression and exploitation away from us or aside from us is come together against the common enemy.
Black Power. Black Power. Can you hear me, comrade? Like, we having some issues again with the audio here. Something's going
Black
on.
Black Power, tell me, you can hear me?
Yeah, right on. Yeah, right on. It is what it is. You know what I'm saying?
It ain't nothing
going to do the intro. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to go ahead and reintroduce who he is just in case y'all ain't here. Black Power, Black Power, Black Nation. You're tuned into In Defense of the People Tuesday night weekly broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern with your host, People's Political Party National Chair, Nat Turner, co-host, National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, myself, and our engineer on the ones and twos, National Minister of Communications, Sister Amina, calling each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time at 845-277-9266. Press 1 to participate. Tonight's topic, an update on Mother Africa. You have any comments or any concerns, press 1 to participate. We're going to open up our lines to our national chair, Nat Turner. Black Power and Uhuru, comrade, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, brother, right on, Black Power. Yeah, again, you know, we just want those who listen and understand what time it is. We obviously must be doing something right. We don't believe that these glitches or honest glitches, mechanical errors or what have you, communications, going into some type of technical problems or whatever. We've been around long enough to know better. No more, no less than some opposed, some hidden forces, some forces who will do whatever they can at times to disrupt the message that's being brought across to the people. We are a revolutionary organization. We make no apologies for that. We don't feel odd or we're not going to be the elephant in the room. It's no more, no less than us wanting the same things for our people that pig and rapist George Washington wanted for his. I'm very clear on that. Black people have the right to exist on this planet as human beings. It's our human right to have the basic necessities of life, the basic needs, food, clothing, and shelter, along with a decent form of governmental system, however we see fit, that we've always been used to as a collective unit of people. There's certain terms and terminologies that we have in even in our own indigenous languages that we once spoke when we were living in a virtual peace in real time as a civilized nation of people. This European attack, onslaught of the African way of life in all facets of human existence has all but totally corrupted us. In some areas, gravely corrupted us. Once a segment or a portion of us were violently ripped from the womb, from the mother country, and so here we find ourselves as descendants of those who were brought here by force and once again made to be the SOL, the source of labor, free source of labor, forced to slave from can't see in the morning to can't see at night. And so we're returning back to the motherland in this continuation of an update on Mother Africa. We had touched off on beginning the new age situation, which appears to be taking part in, which appears to be taking place in parts of the continent, the new blood, so to speak, retaking the governmental structure back from the puppet governments who in the service of the Imperial forces, chiefly led by the Anglo, was referred to as the Anglo-American establishment, meaning the British and the American imperialist forces in their various tentacles, economically, politically, socially, the exportation, the transportation, or implantation of the colonial idea, the neo-colonial aspect of things, the highest stage of capitalism is imperialism, the highest stage of imperialism is neo-colonialism, as was so clearly understood by one of the former leaders in Africa, Kwame Nkrumah. And so very, very clearly understood. And so what we mean by, you know, just an update on Mother Africa, we feel that it's necessary to make mention what's going on there. The children of Africa being spread around the world in recent historical times under the so-called slave system at the hands of the Europeans, and how they established holdings around the world, or particularly places that indigenous people had always inhabited. We're going to, you know, finish this. Wanted to get into the presence of the Chinese in Africa, along with some other things. And I wanted to touch on Libya's former leader, the brilliant Muammar Gaddafi, who actually had set the tone for the financial, economic liberation of the mother continent by having transformed Libya into an independent state outside of the European construct or the European worldview of governmental rulership, or the type of system that the Europeans have forced on people around the world under the term of democracy, which is clearly a farce, which is very dangerous in itself and its true motivations and operation. People have gotten blinded by the concept of the vote, you know, which is had been made to be the linchpin of democracy, but voting is not necessarily the linchpin of democracy. The linchpin of democracy is a sovereign state that's dictated and controlled by the people, which means that voting is part of that. It's part of that. It's sovereign people, not at the hands of a few, the white ruling class and their non-white flunkies, black, brown, red, and yellow. The whites are understood in terms of so-called structured middle class, which in essence is the buffer zone to getting to the wealthier whites. There's the super rich and the rich. This thing about the 1% in this antagonistic relationship between the 1% and the American populace and this Occupy Wall Street movement that came out of that. Let us not be confused necessarily, because a lot of those who participated in the 1% weren't necessarily anti-capitalists. Their main beef was just that. Their beef with the super rich was just that they weren't paying their fair share of taxes like everyone else. However, in the in the midst of this Occupy Wall Street movement, there are many of those whites who have become anti-capitalists. They become anti-capitalists because they finally realize the contradictions. They finally realize that you're not going to be able to mix oil and water in a glass, and the two are going to mix evenly. You can clearly do an experiment with oil and water. You can pour water in the glass first and then pour oil in and then watch and see how the oil reacts to the water. You see, in other words, like an example, when there's an oil spill, you know, you can see the oil, how it reacts, you know, let's say if it happened in the middle of the ocean or the Atlantic or whatever, or a river or something like that, or a creek, you see. So it is obvious that they don't necessarily mix together. And that is what you can see about capitalism, the contradictions. And so those whites who have become conscious, which is a class struggle, when you throw in non-whites, it becomes a much more vicious cycle where the non-whites are being subjected to not only capitalist whims, but the superstructure of what is referred to as white supremacy. And the part of that white supremacy is racism, you see. And so with Gaddafi recognizing the so-called West's plans and the understanding of the historical narrative, Africa under the complete dominance of the colonial regimes in Africa, as a result of the scramble for Africa, where the European powers, so-called powers, got together and decided that they would divide Africa up among themselves. And so Gaddafi, having understood that, and of course, you know, the laws of nature also would naturally push those who have been getting kicked around for decades, you know, since the 1880s, and that they would somehow manage to so-called rise up, learning the ways of their enemies. You can't conquer what you don't know, you know, and so forth, you know, defeat what you don't understand. And this is what Gaddafi had learned to do. It learned the Europeans, the financial structure, finance, the laws of finance, I believe, which is actually a book, the currency wars that the Europeans had always waged against the non-whites, in this case Africa, the dominance of the French franc, you know, the French currency, the franc, in which had become the instrumental currency and its relation to the U.S. dollar. And so Gaddafi had finally figured it out. And what he did was the creation, having you know, built up Libya first, its own, you know, control bank, an economic system, a political system based on democracy, a true democracy, people's assemblies, people's councils, and so forth, and especially in instances of women within society. And so, of course, being an oil-rich country, yet, of course, realized that the Europeans, one of their pet peeves, so to speak, or one of their obsessions or their dependencies was oil. And so Africa had been in the top running among the places on the earth that possessed a lot of oil, untapped oil or tapped oil. And so this is what Gaddafi had done, and There's what's called OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, which is very, you know, crucial here with the imperialists. And so these old countries, for the most part, are non-European states. And so Venezuela is one of those OPEC countries. But, you know, like I said, Gaddafi was smart enough to realize that what's under the people's feet naturally belonged to them, and that it was no way that the people should be poor if one of the most prized possessions was worth so much. And this is how Libya was able to accumulate its wealth. And, of course, accumulating gold in the African region. And so with combination that, they were able to build the economic infrastructure that was formidable around the world. And so the United States, of course, and the rest of their white allies, the French, the British, and so forth, leading the way, you know, saw that, of course, as a viable threat. And he proved it. He was a genius. And, of course, the Europeans made their moves to, use the same strategy that the FBI had used against the Black Panther Party. But the strategy of bad jacketing, which you would, you know, give one a bad name, using media propaganda, you know, painting Gaddafi as a dictator, you know, his government as a regime, you know, the usual labels that the whites use around the world towards non-white rulers who are not afraid to, you know, so-called stand up, you know, to the imperialists. And back in 2011, the bombing of Libya, the campaign that would eventually lead to the murder of Gaddafi under the watch of a black president, Obama, you know, is rather ironic that someone whose African heritage goes back to, I believe, Kenya. And the history of, you know, the Kenyan people struggle from whence his father emerged, that this taking over this assault, this campaign against another African country is really ridiculous, you know. You know, a lot of us, you know, we have our emotional attachments to, you know, a black president because, you know, you're black, she's black, I'm black, and he's black, and so forth. But we get beyond that. You know, we get beyond it. We have to go beyond that. You know what I'm saying? Capitalism is capitalism, whether it's black, brown, red, yellow, or white. It's still capitalism. A pig is a pig. It still will always be a pig. You know, you put a dress on a pig, what do you got? You know what I'm saying? You got a pig in a dress. It doesn't change. You know, so we don't harbor no some exemption on the part of someone because they're black in the service of the unseen forces that operate in these secretive governmental bodies, which claim to be this word that they use, actually so-called non-governmental, you know, what is it? Bipartisan, what have you, you know, unofficial bodies, and, you know, and so forth to you know, make you think that, oh, this is just some meeting, they're just getting together and gathering, they're just, you know, just, you know, discussing some things and debating on some things. It's bullshit. It's bullshit, straight up. You take a look at the whole Obama network, you will see some things that, you know, that may startle those of us who are black who don't understand. And we want to say this here. We don't say things to hurt people. We say things to alert people. You know, as clear as night is from day. Let me say that again. We don't say things to hurt people. We say things to alert people, you know. And so with the takeover of Gaddafi and, of course, being the Secretary of State, you know, at the time, and was spearheading this overthrow of Gaddafi using the corporate control media about Gaddafi had been maltreating the Libyan people, slaughtering the Libyan people, and that the Libyan people needed liberation, and that the cavalry would come in and save them and bring democracy to them. You can't bring democracy to a people who had already been practicing democracy in the first place. So these strategies that they use, and of course the CIA always has its hand in there somewhere. We'd be out of our minds to think they didn't have their hands in it, even if they didn't have their hands in it. We'd rather be wrong considering the possibility that they were there and they're not considering or haven't thought about it at all, you see. And so that's what had taken place. Now, there's this thing with her email or her internet server, whatever, and which is the reason why she was attempting to have her hard drive wiped clean, because these emails that she had been sending, these private emails, 3,000 emails, which had become released from a private server in late 2015, and about a third of those were from a close friend named Sidney Blumenthal, who I believe is a white Jew. I don't play this game about Jew and white, Jews and whites, blacks, Jews and whites. No, a white Jew. There are white Christians, there are white atheists, and there's various white forms of Christians. There's white Methodists and white Calvinists and white so forth, white Protestant, white Baptist, you know, white Lutheran, you know, and so forth. There's a this I guess she would be a reporter or investigative person who's also an author. She had written this paper, Why Gaddafi, Why They Killed Gaddafi, subtitled Colonialism is alive and well in central banking. And this is a 2021 report. Her name is Ellen Brown, and she believes in, she's an advocate of public banking reform, the founder and president of the Public Banking Institute. And she talks about how in 2021, you know, she had said that was the 10-year anniversary of the violent intervention of Cuba and in Libya, and, you know, an assassination of Gaddafi, where she highlights, Hillary Clinton and what they did to the basic objective and goal for his elimination was to prevent, Gaddafi from founding an African central bank with its own gold-backed currency, which would, spell woe, for the imperialists. The institution would have challenged, the power of the dollar, and of course, finally allowed the African continent to escape its colonial shackles. And anyone with any sense, you can turn this around and let's say the Chinese had been doing the people in Europe that, and that the Europeans had figured out the game at last with the Chinese, and that the Europeans had one of the European leaders of one of the countries, for instance, let's say Greece, had figured it out. And they had utilized something that would allow them to accumulate wealth and then take that wealth and flip it into something else, okay, as a plan to come out from underneath the yoke of the Chinese. And that would have been applauded all over Europe. And the people would have gotten behind it. It would have been a collective effort on the part of the European nations that would have been celebrated, and it would have been legitimate, even if they had to use violence as part of it to defend what they were doing when the Chinese would come in and say, we're not having that That's not going to happen. The leader, he's got to go. We're going to assassinate him and so forth. And the Europeans would have just stood by and cried on everyone, on each other's shoulders, and let that be. No, bullshit. Bullshit. There are two forms of violence when you look at history from, you know, from a historical perspective. There's nothing, no more nor less than two forms of violence. Anything else is the bastard children or the legitimate children, one or the other. And these two forms of violence is oppressive violence and revolutionary violence. Revolutionary violence wouldn't be necessary or possible if there was no oppressive violence. There may be those who heard when I stated about the Frankenstein scenario. You know, there couldn't be a Frankenstein without a Dr. Frankenstein who created his alter ego, and in the end, his alter ego turned on him. You know, so these are natural laws in nature. There's nothing made up about it. I think it's more about the acceptance stage than anything. But that's pretty much what it was. And, of course, with the currency situation, the history that always had been where the African nations had been locked into such things as debt, right? And this is a strategy on part of the Europeans to keep their presence in Africa, to always have the African nations thinking that the Europeans were coming to save them, or the Europeans were coming in to bring relief to them. So they would get them into these what's referred to as structural adjustment loans, okay? And, you know, through their own made-up contrivances such as the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, these banks that had been set up to so-called uplift African nations that were stuck in the quagmire, uplift them and bring them into the developing realm of the developing countries, using America as the example, the epitome of the developing country. Inclusive of science and technology, and bringing the primitives into the light, advanced civilization. You know, it's always been a strategy of bullshit. Basically, the World Bank also and the IMF. Basically, it was never meant for these nations to develop to the point where they could actually be on an equal footing with Great Britain and America, you know, and France, you know, clear bullshit, on the level of the NATO pact, you know, the pack of wolves who are after Russia, you know, using Ukraine as a proxy to dismantle the Russian system in order to confiscate Russia's oil reserves, which at present is the premier region on the earth that produces oil. And those NATO countries had been dependent on Russia, which is what that's all about over there. But, you know, so it was never any intention. And so this is what Gaddafi realized in setting up Libya to get in the position to be able to assist its other African neighbors, or being accounted as the 50 states of Africa. Nkrumah had realized that in trying to develop the United States of Africa, the 50 confederated states that would operate under a single currency or what have you. And so this was Gaddafi was doing, taking the gold reserves and turning that into a currency we refer to as the gold dinar, which would be the currency. And so therefore that would have led to the overthrow of the French franc and its cousin, the U.S. dollar. And a lot of our people, you know, don't really understand how it works. And that's because of, you know, what would appear to be several things. Now, one of these things that you can say is the extent of the knowledge, where here in the snakes, black people, when they're taught about Africa, what are they taught about Africa, and how much and whatnot. So there's no concept of it, whatever capacity, whatever institution, and we may even question the black, historically black colleges, just as no swipe. It is what it is, but the extent of standing the African situation, of course, there's African studies. Some white universities have African studies and whatnot. They choose some person that then went and took up history and whatnot, and they place them in these positions, and they become the professor of African studies. These titles that they heap upon themselves and whatnot, but it's to what extent people here in the snakes, black people who are descendants of African blood, who are taught about the situation of Africa, and so to limit our understanding collectively, which therefore will make this shit seem like it's somebody's trying to teach somebody Chinese math, or physics or whatever, these fields that some people have no clue about or wouldn't, dare venture into because of this notion about it takes a certain mind or a brain to study physics and whatnot, shit like that. But it's not impossible. So it's that to extent. And, of course, you always have to look at so-called black leadership in this country, and how much are they telling us when it comes to the diaspora, so to speak, right? And so there may be few, to go into this realm, in what I'm saying. So this is what we're attempting to do tonight, to give you some understanding. The sale of oil, right? The United States had set up the snakes, let me correct that. The snakes had set up after World War II, along with their imperialist friends, this thing called the General Agreement of Tariffs and Trade, to put themselves in a lofty position. The other thing is referred to as the North Atlantic Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA. Okay, and they set themselves up knowing that they would consciously putting the non-white countries at a unfair disadvantage, which would make them be vulnerable at whatever moment any one of these countries decided to think for itself. So put them in the position to where whenever one of them so-called got out of line, they could attack their currency and drive them into a crisis, devalue their currency and drive them into a crisis. And so Gaddafi understood this, and which they had been doing all around the world, and particularly to non-white nations in Latin America and Africa and even some Asian countries. And so they made the dollar the standard currency with which to trade. Okay, so if you had a currency, your currency was compared to the dollar, 100 pennies, okay, and you had 100 pennies, and those 100 pennies in the equivalent of another nation's currency would be 37 pennies, which means that nation is 67 pennies down, right? They're 67 pennies in trouble, in other words. You see? And so you would have to accumulate 67 more pennies to match those 100 pennies and trade with them. And then when you trade with them your currency, then you can buy with those 100 American pennies oil from another nation. And that's how it worked. That's how it has been working. This is how they've been able to pimp other countries around the world, in particularly non-white countries or the countries that they deem as non-state actors. Okay. That is how it works. Some refer to it as the petrodollar. Petro is the word for rock. And, of course, you know, geology and petroleum. Petro, petroleum, the name Peter, all that's the same. That's the root of that word meaning the rock. And so that's why it's referred to as the petrodollar. You see, and so countries like Iran, China, Russia, India, and Libya, Iraq, Saddam had gotten around to it. Saddam had come to the realization of it. And so Iraq had become free of it. They were growing free of it. That is why they took down Saddam. And, of course, they painted this, you know, villainous picture of him and whatnot and all this kind of shit. But that is how it works. So if you're in another nation and those 100 pennies, while you have 27 pennies, which means you're in worse condition. And so what these nations did was figure out how to accumulate 67 more pennies, right? As a matter of fact, 68 more pennies to rival those 100 pennies, and that they will no longer be able to depend on the petrodollar to get oil because they had raised the stakes. That is how it works. And so that is what you call economic freedom, economic liberation. That is what Gaddafi did. And so Gaddafi having oil and gold, they raised the stakes even higher. And they said, well, from now on, if you want to buy our oil, you will have to trade yours for gold. Or your currency would have to be backed by gold because we have it. Now, I want to read one of the emails that have been published from Hillary Clinton. Okay, but that is how it worked. And so they took their natural resources and turned it into a currency. Okay, this is a, let's see, one of these emails dated April 2nd, 2011, read in part. Now listen to this. This is Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton. This is what she's saying. Gaddafi's government holds 143 tons of gold, not pounds. Gaddafi's government holds 143 tons of gold and a similar amount in silver. This gold was accumulated prior to the current rebellion and was intended to be used to establish a pan-African currency. Picture that. Based on the Libyan golden dinar. You spell that D-I-N-A-R. And I think that is an Arabic word. This plan was designed to provide the Francophone African countries with an alternative to the French franc. Let me say that again. This plan was designed to provide the Francophone African countries with an alternative to the French franc. The Francophone countries were those North African countries because France was allotted the North African countries. And the Europeans called themselves trying to divide up Africa among themselves like a pie. So you take a map and you look at North Africa, that's what you see. Libya, Morocco, Algeria, Mauritania, you know, the North African countries, west of Egypt, so-called Egypt. You know, yeah, Egypt, Northeast Africa, next door to, you know, the Sinai Peninsula, on into Palestine and so forth. You know, the Red Sea, the how they created the Suez Canal, you know, as a way to conduct commerce, how the British had set that up, you know, the colonial days and stuff. Well, so that's an email. That's an email that she had sent. And then, let's see, in a source comment, the original declassified email added, according to knowledgeable individuals, this quantity of gold and silver is valued at more than $7 billion. French intelligence officers discovered this plane shortly after their current rebellion began. And this was one of the factors that influenced President Nicolas Sarkozy's decision to commit France to the attack on Libya. According to these individuals, Sarkozy's plans are driven by the following issues: a desire to gain a greater share of Libya oil production, increase French influence in North Africa, improve his internal political situation in France, provide the French military with an opportunity to reassert its position in the world, address the concern of his advisors over the long-term plans to supplant France as the dominant power in Francophone Africa. You see how they work, you know, in solidarity. The Europeans, you know, they can call themselves French. They can call themselves German. They can call themselves Greek. They can call themselves British. They call themselves Swiss and so forth. Call themselves American. But it is obvious that they share a common bond, and that is their European heritage. And they will let no non-whites cleave that asunder. So black and brown people in general have to take on that same mentality to understand. You know, they've set the tone at which the game is going to be played on the chessboard. You see, but they give us this UN shit, you know, like all these great nations together against the evil forces, the bad guys, Iran, you know, China, Russia, and so forth, you know, Korea. You know, Donald Trump called, I think his name, Kim Jong-il, Trump referred to him as Rocket Man, you know. But we noticed that, you know, he didn't mess with Rocket Man, you see. And so they would be considered non-state actors, see. They can change overnight, you know, and come to an agreement on some nuclear shit, some weaponry, whatever, and all of a sudden be taken off the list. And then next thing, they're buddy, you'll see him sitting over, they'll be getting again in between Manhattan, New York. He'd be going shopping in Beverly Hills, you know, and they buddy, and overnight that shit could change. Next thing he's back as an evil dictator, you know. And that's how the game goes. But that is the real reason why they removed Gaddafi, why they had him assassinated, had him murdered, you know. And so the struggle continues. And this is what the young brothers who have now pulled these successful overthrows. The Europeans are very clever to call them coups. Okay. We see them as successful overthrows, as successful revolutionary overthrows to bring about the transformation of the countries, that conditions of the African countries that have been under the very sophisticated whims of imperialism, referred to as neocolonialism, the most sophisticated kind that they have reached, which is its apex. You know, we had touched on some of that, you know, in the beginning about how they take a handful of Africans in Nigeria, educate them in the European countries. Okay, they go back and establish a wonderful middle class in Nigeria, use certain publications like National Geographic, and they go and do a piece on the, what is this word that they use? the something, something. The new vibrant African middle class, and they get him to wear expensive European Italian style design clothes, the type of shit that Rick Ross may wear, you know, Tom Ford and Versace, you know, and put him in a top hat and so forth, whatever. Take pictures and present him there. And have us thinking that the Nigerians have come up. when you look at their GDP, gross domestic product, and so forth, gross national, and then they start accumulating the tablet, and what do you see? The same shit that we saw when he had been there in the first place. And this is the type of sophisticated neocolonialism, you know. So there's that crop, you know, who are willing to take the 30 shekels of silver, you know, out of selfishness. They've been Europeanized, colonized minds. Educated in France, educated in Germany, educated in Britain, educated in America, but they call it exchange program. You know, the exchange program, you know, multiculturalism, you know, it's good, you know, that other people can learn other people's cultures and we can all live in one. It's bullshit. It's bullshit, you know. You see this this influx of in college basketball, right? You see this influx in college basketball, where the brothers are playing for these schools that just so happen to be getting national exposure on CBS on Sundays, you know. And he's got a 20-letter last name, you know, right off the bat. And the commentators are sitting there having fun trying to pronounce his last name, you know, that kind of shit. And so you see this rise, this increase, you know. This is part of this deal. This is part of this deal here. You see that they have, you know, and these governments, no more, no less than new age agents in their selfish motivations, why they let their people starve, you know. And that is the kind of cutthroat shit that has been taking place. And these young brothers will come and learn military science and have gotten themselves in a position to overthrow them, to remove these pitiful Negroes. Had they been living here in America, you know, the pitiful Negro, you know, the house Negro that Malcolm had talked about, you know, and this is what's going on, you know. So they would hopefully learn from the lessons of Gaddafi and understand what's under their feet and the potential of rising up. You know, what the anti-capitalists consider as nationalizing these companies who set up shop in Africa, you know, these Euro-American countries, companies which set up shop. And this is the stubbornness of the French, who have the audacity to tell these African brothers and sisters, when they say, you know, y'all got to roll out, your days of dominating all that shit, and you wearing nice things and driving around in nice cars and wearing nice watches and Rolex and jewelry and shit like that, living in mansions and palaces, it's got to go. And talking about they ain't going anywhere. You know, the nerve. You know, the nerve. And where's the black intellectuals who at times have this conversation on Africa? Where they at now? Where are they at now? You know, and we have to stop standing for that also. We have to stop going for it also. You know, but and another thing, Gaddafi was in the in the process also establishing independent telecommunication systems for the African continent, which would rival these telecommunication systems which actually holding the cell phone industry hostage in Africa. You know, these programs where they hand out free cell phones, you know, as though there's some kind of benevolent disguised socialist program. They do that right here in America. See, and then you recently this new testing system where everybody's phone was in sync and they're testing this new emergency system and all this kind of shit. You know, there's a whole sinister scheme behind that, you see. And then the dependency on being able to pay one's phone bill under this type of structure, you know, which is the same as placing them at a disadvantage, which would create debt, you see. But that is another thing that he was getting around to. And you have to remember that propaganda is a chief component in a system that seeks to dominate other nations. In the 60s,
in the 70s even, in the 80s. The CIA would run these programs when there would be these guerrilla campaigns to remove the puppet regimes in Central Africa, you know, in some of these countries, right? And CIA had, and the British, they had own radio stations disguised as so-and-so, so-and-so, but they would broadcast disinformation, you know, and they would plant fake news and false stories in the media, you know, to throw the people in derision against one another, you know. And this is what they did in the 70s and the 80s. You know, this is why these things that are still lingering as a result of these old internal contradictions, antagonisms by playing one group off on the other is a clear, very clear Hegelian, Machiavellian strategies and tactics that they use, you know. And, excuse me. But that is the thing that Africa possesses as potential, and it has to become a reality, or else, you know, or else we'll get the same bullshit and jive that we're fed here, the same bullshit and jive with a small handful of class of so-called successful blacks who go in service of serving the empire, where they take the best of our minds, you know, and basically cut deals with them, you know, and the ones that they couldn't, these are black identity extremists, these are have no place in society, that we're all one, you know, it's not about black and white, that kind of shit there, you know what I'm saying? But that's what it, and it's very important that we, you know, that we touch on Gaddafi as an example. But they have to stop being potential. They have to become a reality by all means. You know, by all means, which all Gaddafi did was prove that these Europeans are not invincible. He proved that the Anglo-American establishment has cracks in its dam. And the cracks are getting larger and larger and larger and larger. We just want the dam to burst. You know, clear as night is someday. This is no rhetoric. You know, we want the dam to burst. You know, there are those who claim that they care about the brothers and sisters on the continent, and there are a lot of those who are very sincere, who are doing things that ain't on the radar, who are doing things that ain't making Oprah. It's not making Nightline and Dateline and 2020 and all that kind of shit. It's not making, but they're doing great things, you know. And our hat goes off to them, you know, the real, true, and genuine love, you know, for our brothers and sisters, especially in Southern Africa, with the young Walima, you know, who's a Winnie Mandela disciple, you know, protege of Winnie Mandela. Who's a brilliant brother who understands the whole landscape, you know, and we say more power to him, and we stand in solidarity with him. If you ain't with him, then you're against him, and if you're against him, then you're against us here. As clear as night is from day. In some instances, it would appear we don't even have any friends, as Dr. John Henry Clark once said. You know, when you look at all the other different groups, you know, the East Asians, the Arabs, you know, they've all done us harm in one way, shape, or form. I mean, it would appear that the brown people, you know, the Latino people, the Hispanic or the Spanish-speaking persons or people who have been colonized, blood heavily mixed and watered down, you know, from brown skin to pale skin, you know, those who have succumbed to the Spanish culture through the imperialist forces that came here and confiscated what is now known as Mexico, which was once known as New Spain, you know, by the Spanish conquistadors who had come in and taken over. And so, yeah, and so on that note, you know, we want to bring it to focus. One other thing, too, hopefully that time, we want to bring up another aspect, another wing, another extension of the neo-colonialist phase in Africa. And that is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The Clintons had also set one up
also, you know, along with their daughter. Their daughter married into a rich white Jewish family. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe the Clintons at some point, their family line may go back to a so-called Jewish bloodline or something, if not mistaken. I saw that somewhere or something like that. But anyway, what Bill Gates had been doing in Africa. Bill Gates didn't go to school for no type of virology, no type of anything, you know, at all, period. He's no virologist. He's no expert in you know, vaccination disease. But it's his money. It's what he's done with accumulating capital through, you know, Microsoft or what have you, right? And so what he's hobby is what being in Africa and launching these programs, these vaccination programs, you know, as though somehow he has some moral side to him, and that his heart goes out to all the hundreds of thousands of millions of Africans who have been infected with AIDS and Ebola and so forth. These government created man-made diseases and viruses that have basically been used as part of the depopulation program of depopulating Africa and creating this phantasmagoria, this scenario about food production, this scenario about whether or not the earth can sustain 8 billion people population, and that he's spoken in rather subliminal language. It's not broadcast like talking about it, but his sinister plan is no more, no less than part of the depopulation program disguised as health, improving the health of the people of Africa. It is known, and there's been reports that whenever these forces show up, the women take up their children and they flee into the bush because they're not allowing their children to be vaccinated because they've become educated enough now to start understanding through what their ancestors had been through. And so now their political awareness and their political consciousness has been heightened, you see. And this is the response now. And so this is what the Peaceful Political Party believes, as the Black Panther Party believe here in America, heightening the people's consciousness to where their response become heightened. You see, and it is what it is, you know, but the Clintons have also set themselves up in the form of being agents of the corporations, going to Africa and set up shop and, you know, this term, you know, getting and using finesse, setting up these programs and whatnot, these grants and what all types of Machiavellian strategies to work as agents for the imperialist corporations to make sure that these corporations have a smooth lane or clear the way for the corporations to continue to dominate in Africa. And that is what the Clintons are up to. And of course, there's the donations that come in, similar to the presidential campaigns here in the snakes. You know, when they size up all the candidates and pick and choose which ones that they deem would be the most viable to represent their capitalist whims here in America. And so therefore the donations that are poured in, Obama had broke the record for campaign donations of any candidate who's ever ran for president. And there's actually, you know, the listing, the public record, as a matter of fact, the disclosures of the donations. And what you see is you see how could a German bank, the Deutsche Bank, How could they lose when they gave donations to both the Republicans and the Democrats? If Clinton and Obama at one point were running it against each other, debating each other for the presidential nomination of the Democrats, how could they lose when they poured money on all sides, running against McCain and so forth? How could they lose? You see, so this is a strategy on their part. They see us as peons. You know, they see us as those who don't have the ability to think. You know, we go get a diploma, you know, go get a degree and whatnot, you know. But there are other types of levels of thinking, and which is beyond our comprehension, that we don't have the IQ enough to reach that level, you see. And even those who have been referred to as the intelligentsia, you know, among the black population here in America, what Du Bois referred to as the talent intent. And if you do diligent research, if you go back in time and take a look at it, some of these things would be disturbing to certain people. You know, I've said before that, you know, we all have our favorites. You know, one person's favorite is Malcolm X. Another person's favorite is Martin Luther King. Another person's favorite is Sasha Core. My favorite is H.R.A.P. Brown. Or my favorite is Thurgood Marshall. Or my favorite is Frederick Douglass. Or my favorite is Harriet Tubman. You know, so forth. You know, my favorite is Dorothy Height. You know, my favorite is Rosa Parks. And go on all day about it. But when you get the peeling the layers back, you'll find some disturbing things. You'll understand why black people are still in this quagmire that we have today. This is no personal attack. It's a historical fact. You know? And the people follow. People have the right to be critical. No one's above the law. Period. Not even people's political party. You know? And so therefore, you know, the type of things you know, that take place, and for us not to be educated enough to understand these forces that are in Africa, you know, and what the Clintons are doing, even in blackface in a lot of cases, you know, sort of paved the way for the corporations to stay in Africa and keep dominating the natural resources of Africa, you know, having a standing army, under the command that was referred to as AFRICOM. You know, they want us to think that they're going to come in and train African nations and soldiers and whatnot in the art of anti-terrorism. You know, they're going to defend, they're going to train them how to fight ISIS and terrorism. And when at the same time, they've been the one who created the boogeymen in Africa too. You know. This story about mass kidnapping of young African girls, you know, Boko Haram. You know, I can't think of this other boogeyman's name, as a matter of fact, right now. But, you know, the same similar strategies. You know, so that is the wing of the neo-colonialist imperialist forces in Africa, you know, disguised as humanitarian aid and help concerns, you know, around the world. Even the Doctors Without Borders under, I think his name is Jared Kushner, the same strategy, same similar strategy. We wanted to add that into it too, you know, the whole perspective on what's going on. And just one last thing. You know, when I talked about the depopulation program, right, there's actually, you know, a memorandum, as a matter of fact, a memorandum that was written up by one Henry Kissinger, a white Jew, you know, who has a long history of creating havoc and chaos and sabotage, murder and political assassination under his lead and charge. There's places in South America
Henry Kissinger could not actually go back and visit because of the fact that there's no extradition treaty with you know, Latin American countries and the snakes. But he is wanted to this day in certain countries. He's wanted in Chile and for the 1973 murder of President Allende, rather ironically, on 9/11. And so when 9/11 happened, the people in Chile were reminded of their own 9/11, 1973 9/11. You see, and that's what a syndrome that they had. You know how somebody's, you know, been, you know, like somebody's been raped, you know, and you know they're managing, you know, to be human. To be out in public or whatever and see somebody wearing a red shirt and that the perpetrator wore a red shirt that night and it triggers something. You see what I'm saying? A trauma syndrome. But Henry Kissinger was the brainchild, was referred to as Memorandum 200. And Memorandum 200 is basically no more, no less than a target program against the continent of Africa. Using the strategy of destabilization. This is the strategy. I ain't making this shit up. You can type in Memorandum 200, look it up, and read for yourself. You see all the, it's a very intricately written paper, and they have these different planks inside of it. But the part where he was focusing on a two-for-one strategy, you know, what is it, with the two birds with one stone, destabilizing countries to keep them off balance and in constant static. Which at the same time, which will lead to genocide amongst themselves, to practice genocide, and therefore the subset of what is referred to as Population Council. Population Council was founded by the Rockefeller clan, I believe in the 70s. And so this Population Council is the bastard child of what's referred to as the Malthusian philosophy, named after some white man who hadn't even traveled around the world and had the nerve to talk about the planet was becoming overpopulated or into the future and whatnot. And what must they do to control this menace that would overwhelm food production? Somebody who lived in the late 18th, early 19th century. Named Thomas Malthus, and this is what this depopulation program had derived from. And so the Rockefellers had set this up, and Henry Kissinger has always been instrumental in it. And so therefore, to stay in control of the natural resources of the continent, you see, so it's all tied in together, you know. But we just wanted to add that just give, you know, people an idea of these things that have been set up to bring about the demise of black and brown people in Africa and black and brown people in Latin America also. You know, the very, very clandestine, sadistic strategy, you know, no regard for life. At present, as we speak now, at present they're referring to Hamas as animals. We live next door to animals, and so therefore they deserve to be treated like animals, savages and whatnot, barbaric behavior and what Hamas is doing don't even compare to what the Europeans have done in Africa. It don't even come close. The only difference is it's been more sophisticated at doing it. You see them saying there's many ways that they've come up with to annihilate black and brown people in Africa, including the children, the babies. And by the way, even that story hasn't even been, they can't even officiate the story. They can't even actually vouch for the story, you know, and you know, sustain it. You know, they can't even substantiate the story, by the way. You see what I'm saying? So on to the Chinese. Look at, keep on time. This thing with the Chinese in Africa has been debatable.
among certain circles of black politically conscious brothers and sisters, looking at it from certain angles, different angles. But the Chinese have gotten themselves in a position to be as formidable now against the American Empire, and the American Empire ain't so big and bad after all, that the American Empire has lost its grip and is losing its grip more and more and more as we go. We would like to see it speed up. And however, we're not necessarily fans of the Chinese being in Africa also. However, there appears to have been some types of agreements that would appear to be more slightly reasonable or somewhat reasonable to where the Africans nations can receive technology, you know, in exchange for natural resources and whatnot. But the Chinese have, of course, their own personal ambitions. And in the early stages of that, the Chinese had also been faced with trading, you know, currency in order to, you know, buy oil. And so what the Americans were doing, the snakes was doing, they were trying to find some type of way to put the Chinese in the bind or in the stranglehold, in the neck hold, in the choke hold. And so they realized that the Chinese economy had, you know, of course, been the fastest growing structured economy in the world, outstripping America, Britain, France, Germany, and all the other so-called G7 countries, G9, one minute they G9, they G7, they G, and so forth, right? So they become alarmed at China's growth. China's growth and development since the Chinese Revolution that was carried out by Chairman Mao, the brain trust behind the Chinese Revolution, the liberation of damn near half billion people out from underneath the hold of the small red dot referred to as Japan, Japanese imperialism, and their growth and development coming to a position of being the largest economy in the world. And so what the snakes were attempting to do to have some type of leverage against the Chinese was make the Chinese dependent on oil, and the oil that had been coming out of Africa. And so what the Chinese did, the Chinese formed an alliance. The Chinese formed an alliance with the Iranians, and the Chinese formed an alliance with the Russians. This is what you see today, you see. And so they were able to figure out. So if the snakes could have them be dependent on oil, then they can slow the Chinese down. In other words, have a trump card or ace up the sleeve. And so what the Chinese did, the Chinese said, well, we're going to go into Africa, and we're going to cut in. We're going to cut in on what they're doing, and we're going to give the Africans more than what they've ever been given them. You see, and so that is the move that's been made. But at the same time, this is no more, no less than imperialist whims themselves, because if the Americans left and the Chinese would still be there. Or let me say it like this. If there was no need for the Chinese to be there, okay, and the Americans, there's no need for them to be there. Would the Chinese have come in sincerity and poured in wealth and relieved the African nation that had been held under economic debt to the World Bank and the IMF? You know, and this is the thing that those of us who understand the shit, and we're smart enough to understand that there are reasons for being there to challenge the so-called West and their dependency on the natural resources. See, the influx or increase in employment and jobs, where the Chinese have come in and set themselves up as managers and supervisors and whatnot. And there's been reports of the mistreatment of African brothers and sisters on these jobs, you know. And, of course, when you start talking about cultural differences, and some may make the parallel between the historic relationship between the East Asian grocery store owners who set up shop in the black communities, such as South Central, where there have been a couple of high-profile cases of incidents where the Korean store owner had shot and killed a young black patron in the store and so forth, or the, you know, the nasty treatment which the Arabs have seemed to have gotten themselves into also with people of African descent. You know, but it's a game of chess that the Chinese have played, you know, with the Americans. The socialist camp, again, in battle for hegemony of the earth against the capitalists, with the black and brown nations caught in the middle. And so the black and brown nations' most viable plan would be to unite their forces. And let these two camps have it out, and we should fight to win. You know, this is something that an elder had brought to my attention, and I thought it was a brilliant thought, as you know, at the time, and still do. You know, but the grip of the snakes. The Brits and the French in Mother Africa has been interrupted. It has been a dent has been put in the system by the Chinese. Before the Chinese, the Russians had been in Africa during the period of the liberation struggles, you know, that were, you know, kicking off in the 50s, you know, and the Russians had developed some interest. Again, the socialist camp as a result of the Cold War. And of course, many of our people don't understand what the Cold War, you know, what it necessarily was, you know. In other words, the Cold War was no more than a strategy on the part of the CIA, the capitalists, a game of chess to use a Machiavellian strategy of creating a boogeyman, which became the Russians. And it's rather ironic that not so long ago they had just been allies fighting another boogeyman in Hitler. And so you see how the sides change. You know, the Hegelians don't have a side. You know, and some of the best Hegelians were white Jewish wealthy financiers. They don't have a side. You know, of course, you know, you make such statements as these or those, you know, you stand a chance of being called the anti-Semite. And then what we would do is force them to define what a Semite is in the first place. You see, Semite is a concept, and those who understand the Bible, you know, would be able to tackle that issue with ease. See, so we speak on the facts. We speak on the things that have been accumulated through the relationship between the African nations and alien forces that have entered the continent under some type of arrangement. You see, and so the African brothers and sisters in these countries, in these states, have the right to self-determination and define it in a way that best fits their lifestyle, from making their own languages indigenous language be national languages. See, and getting back to the type of communal lifestyle that we've always known. This thing about socialism, Karl Marx didn't invent socialism. Karl Marx didn't found socialism. Karl Marx just simply popularized socialism because he had studied non-white nations, you know, non-white so-called tribes, and had noticed how they had shared a communal relationship, not only with themselves as human beings, but with the land, you know, which is a total opposite, is a total juxtaposition to the capitalist, you know, the property owner who owns 100 acres of land and he forces everybody else to live on his land through what was referred to as rent. You see, accumulates land and then he sets it up to where those who live on the land would have to pay him, you know, to live on the land. And so this is what they refer to as fair. This is what, not fair, but this is what referred to as legal. There have been those who questioned it, you know, from a moral standpoint, even though it's legal. Is it the morally right thing to do? Is it morally wrong? And so the Europeans detached themselves from any such notion of morals, you know, when it comes to acquisition, the accumulation of capital. There's no morals involved. Morals can take a back seat. Morals can step the fuck to the side. This has nothing to do with morals. But the communal form of living that Karl Marx and the psychic Frederick Engels studied, even here with the so-called native indigenous people here, you see, and the socialist concept, the socialist camp. I mean, it wasn't necessarily to take a genius to realize, you know, the word socialist is the same as the word society. But what type of society? What type of society? A communal society, you know, where the land is belongs to the people, is shared by the people, and that everybody has the right to a decent living space, you know, the human right, the natural human right to have a decent living quarters, you know, the co-op, you know, the communal labor force, a task, a laboring task to accumulate, you know, the basic necessities like food, clothing, shelter, you know. And the capitalists are afraid of that because the source of labor is no more than the slave class who sells its labor in an exploitative manner to those who have gotten themselves in a position of power. You know, who have set up laws that would put them in a far, far more advantage than the average person. You know, so African people have always practiced a form of communalism, you know, and at the base of that, reliance on some type of spiritual cultivation as the underlying factor, which serves as a form of checking one's humanism, you know. But the Europeans have, through mass propaganda, you know, have you know, the effectiveness of labeling, you know, to be successful in their ambitions, you know, creating a material society which then became dependent on the natural ability of other foreign lands to accumulate, you know, these natural things in nature, gold, diamonds, oil, uranium, cobalt, coal tan, copper, chocolate, you know, cocoa, and so forth, you know, and the venture capitalist mode of thought, opening other countries' economies up to the capitalist mode of production, you know, which is pretty much what it has been about, you know, and any country that balked at the idea, they became a non-state actor, or they became a dictatorship that had a regime, and the regime practiced one of two things, totalitarianism or authoritarianism. But when you peel the layers back here in America, what do you get? It's just a more sophisticated form here in America. But we hope we've done a good job here in you know, just an update on Mother Africa. Long live the gorilla. And it says, a saying, it says, a loop to continue, you know, in Africa. Now, we stand with our brothers and sisters in Africa, particularly in a larger society of black and brown people in general, black and brown indigenous people. And yes, we should take advantage of their science and technology and use it against them to liberate ourselves. We have the right to liberate ourselves from a pack of animals who just dress the part better than anybody else. You know, they're more sophisticated, as Mussolini said, you know, dress the role better. You know, they're just as fascist as the other countries that they claim to be fascist. They're just as brutal. They're just as barbaric as the other countries who claim they're treating their own citizens as, of committing so-called crimes against humanity, as we are firsthand witnesses right here in the snakes. So on that note, we you know, we're going to conclude here, and we want to thank those who've been listening. And this radio show is no more or less than a political education platform. You know, we believe that our people have to be properly politically educated, cut out all the bullshit, and give our people what they should have been given for the longest. You know, there's a lot of criticism that can be thrown around. You know, there's no personal attack, you know, at all, period. But, you know, every Tuesday, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, In Defense of the People Radio, brought to you by Fuse Political Party. I'm your host, one of your co-hosts, Brother Nat Turner, the National Chairman of People's Political Party, and my co-host, Brother Motherland, National Minister of Defense, and our soil technician on the ones and twos, Sister Amino Shun, our National Minister of Communication. Yes, we have responsibilities and roles. If we don't apologize, and we don't feel strange or weird or abnormal, you know, about having these positions. And so we see you next week, same time. Black power to black people, all power to the people in general, as we can also recognize your whole role. We'll see you next week.
Borrow. You fuck around, get indicted, ain't no tomorrow. My whole nothing, cause this kid's life is off in a cage for the rest of his days. A price that he paid for the mistake he made. So I'm on focus cause my lifestyle's broke. I got to get out cause this fast life's
you
over.
The means. So I guess the drug dealer justifies the fiends. Poverty and unemployment justifies the screens. The reason stacks of paper justifies clean. 2006 would choose the size of me. But in the end he wasn't really what he tried to be. I never let the war justify me. I question how hard some of these cats really be. Cause real niggas don't speak, I actually talk more. Don't make me flip and turn these streets into a chalkboard. I do this for all the real niggas that smoke trees. The husbands, players, pimps, and OGs. For the up and coming cats to the old schoolers. The ones that remember Private Stock and Calvin Coolidge. It's a struggle to make it, keep pushing. See how far you can take it, who I am, what I navigated. What?